Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Bald Move Television. We're the officially unofficial podcast for all of television. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
And we had a little bit of a light week this week because I was on vacation for most of last week. There is a big holiday weekend coming up here in the States.
We're binge watching Stranger Things tomorrow,
which is exciting. So we didn't have a lot of time to watch new stuff, but there's something else we wanted to start doing with Bald Move Television, which is maybe talk about some industry news from time to time.
Yeah, it's something that I'm kind of interested in with all the developments in streaming platforms and ownership changing hands on those things. And I find that all fascinating, the business side behind the new streaming platforms and traditional media companies. So
yeah, so we're going to have a conversation about commercialization of Netflix, and then we're going to talk about the 15-minute short film, The One Reeler, by Tom York and Paul Thomas Anderson, Anima.
One Reeler?
Yeah, that's the name for like...
But it's not, actually, right?
I don't think there was... This was actually shot on film at any time, so yes, that's... But yeah, no, it 15 minutes was that reel of film.
Okay. Because I wouldn't put it past Tom York to be shooting on film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Or Thomas Anderson for that.
But, yeah, either.
But I believe that it would fit on a single reel if they chose to print it on celluloid.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're going to talk about that. First up, you had some Netflix commercialization stuff. I wasn't aware of this debate. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so Netflix obviously only has one business model, right? You give them X amount of dollars per month for as many DVDs as you'd like to get in the mail.
Right.
I think they still have that service.
I don't even know if they do.
Maybe they shut it down. But more importantly, the number of streaming accounts that you want, simultaneous streams and the resolution... but it's basically all like, okay, you pay us and we give you the TV content. There are a lot of analysts out there writing articles right now, and I don't know what inspired this. Maybe it's like taking a look at Netflix quarterly profits as of late or something, or the burn rate at which, you know, they're running through their investor money, creating a deluge of new shows. But a lot of analysts have been writing saying Netflix should come up with an ad-supported free tier, much like traditional television, like network television.
Like Hulu. Hulu's got like the free service, less TV.
Hulu is like a weird hybrid, right? Don't you pay and still get ads?
I think there is a limited amount of stuff you can get without paying. Then there is like the base rate where you have limited commercial interruptions, and then you've got the premium where you don't have any of that shit.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a hybrid.
But they're saying like an entirely free tier, not like a mid-tier pay, but also ads.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily like this idea. I'm not a huge fan of advertising. Although I will say if they implemented something like this, I wouldn't be the customer. Mm-hmm. I'm the customer who wants to pay $15 a month and get everything uninterrupted.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the idea that Netflix could do this?
Well,
because they very much have some thoughts on this as well.
I'm broadly speaking fine with a free tier that's supported by commercials because I can see a lot of cases for it. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think about people that don't have a lot of money that might be like taking advantage of libraries to like rent, you know, DVDs and books and Blu-rays, I guess now. And, you know, Netflix content's the one thing that like, oh man, what if I want to watch Stranger Things and how do I do that? I think it would, I guess I don't see the problem, except what it seems inevitable about this is they'll start double dipping.
Mm-hmm.
That is, if I could set in stone that they can offer a free tier that's commercially supported, but they can't ever, for any circumstances, show me ads on my paid tier,
yeah, yeah,
then I guess I'd be fine for it. But I just feel like that any corporation, you know, once it gets a taste of this sweet extra profits, they're going to be like, well, why not both?
Well, it's weird to me because...
I'm young enough to remember when it was controversial to go to a movie theater and see... ads, not mm-hmm. trailers, ads,
yeah.
Like Coca-Cola, buy Chevy, mm-hmm. this hot new, like, that's
Maria,
like, what
Menounos
the...
is bullshit.
Yeah, like, I'm already watching this for 20 minutes of, like, fucking commercials for movies, and now mm-hmm. you're going to be hitting me with this shit? And now no one even thinks twice about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's the problem with it, is, like, they're going to turn on that spigot, and then it's just Netflix's own... what, moral conscience that would keep it from double dipping?
Right.
And that's up against their fiduciary responsibility to shareholders to make more money. Guess which conviction wins 99% of the time?
Yeah, I mean, we're in that scenario right now, though, right? It's really just their conviction. Because I've heard some thoughts from Netflix themselves saying, we don't really care. We don't like that so much. We're not in the ad-supported game. I'm sure it would take a lot of building out on their part, on the business side, for them to, you know, create an entire like sales branch or team up with a sales partner. It's probably a lot of business to be done on the back end there, but like they seem to be resistant to it, even though according to a lot of estimations, it would bring in about $1 billion a year on Netflix content. And right now we know they're burning through cash to the tune of like $8 billion every year, creating Netflix originals, purchasing licenses for other content. Like, they could really use some money, right?
Yeah, I don't know, because a part of me thinks that Netflix has a plan that they're going to like saturate with all this new content, but then they're going to use their algorithms to ruthlessly weed out content that's not profitable. So I think that Netflix might be half as big as it is right now, or maybe it'll just go through a period of like zero growth as far as content, relative growth. But I feel like that's their plan, is like they're trying to throw everything against the wall, going to see what sticks, and they're going to focus on making the stuff that sticks.
And I think
then that will fix their burn rate, and they can roll out commercialization. What do you think the ceiling is on Netflix pricing too?
I think we're getting pretty close to it.
I feel honestly. Like they could raise it $1 a year and for 5 or 6 years, and nobody would know. Yeah. Nobody would. But that also like Netflix has done something magical with all this deficit spending, which is put itself on the same plane as HBO.
Well, that's the thing that I think has been brilliant about, you know, spending $8 billion a year beyond their budget or whatever. They're essentially throwing a gauntlet on everyone else, saying, we're going to kick your ass in the amount of content, and it's all going to be pretty high quality.
Yeah.
And by the time we run out of the goodwill from investors or the cash that we have on hand, we will be so far ahead in the content game that you will then have to do the same to catch up to us while we're no longer spending that $8 billion and we're raking in multi-billions every year.
And to, I think because of our back catalog. HBO is taking up that gauntlet, it seems.
They are, like I think it's foolish, but...
Yeah, it's like if Maserati just decided to compete on quantity. Like, are tired of these Hyundais outselling us 10-1. Here's a $20,000 Maserati.
But I mean, it's tough also when you see, you know, Netflix winning the same amount of awards or getting nominated for the same amount of Emmys as HBO or, you know, Oscars, whatever.
It does feel like they're trying to engineer some kind of thing, like... We're the only ones that can actually do. I don't know because like there's so many things. Like Disney is going to instantly be competing with these guys.
Well, this is why I'm thinking this ad thing is weird. A weird suggestion for Netflix, because honestly, Hulu is the outlier. Hulu is the weirdo in the room, offering a tier that's ad supported on an online streaming platform. Right? I don't know of any other streaming platform that does that. I don't think Disney's going to do it. I'm pretty sure Apple's not going to do it. I know Netflix doesn't. HBO doesn't. CBS doesn't, even though they're in that game on the television side.
But to me, so the question is, do you think that everyone will continue to resist that impulse?
I don't know.
Like, the second one person does it, five are going to do it. And the second five people
do it,
everyone's
going to do it.
But
Hulu's already doing it, and five aren't doing it.
Yeah, that's true.
Hulu's, like, the only one I can think of that actually does it.
Yeah, and it's also an open question whether Hulu's going to survive the next 5 years. Because they're not Netflix, they're not Disney, they're not HBO.
No, they are Disney now.
Oh.
Disney just bought out the rest of it, I think, the 30%.
Did they really? Okay,
that they didn't
that.
Own from Comcast
so
or
then
something.
So Hulu will eventually be just absorbed into the Disney product, it seems like.
Unless
they have... They might actually see value in keeping, like, Handmaid's Tale, Harlots, things like that.
Off the Disney streaming
Because that's
platform,
why they used to have, like, Touchstone, right? Like, Disney would make a rated R movie, but they'll own Touchstone that will, you know? So it's like, I feel like that maybe Hulu could be... Well, you don't want to set your 7-year-old loose on Hulu necessarily, but Disney maybe would, they could do that. Keep it PG-13 and nobody has problems.
Yeah, I could see it. It's just, it's interesting because I don't think Netflix game is short term. And these ad strategies, I think, are short term views. Like, they're analysts, they're investors who are saying they need to do this because it'd bring in $1 billion a year. Mm-hmm. Netflix says, we don't want to do that because we're building trust and goodwill in our audience for the time when we can't afford to do all the shit we're doing here. And putting ads, offering an ad-free tier is not enough to cover those costs anyway. So we're sticking with our current business model, which is drown the competition with high-quality content.
Plus, I think they just... It's been less than a year that they increased their price. Like, I think that they, like, it would be, they certainly don't have to do it, but behoove them to get, like, a ways down the right before they start doing stuff like that that looks like it's consumer unfriendly.
Yeah.
But it's a prestige thing, too. Like, once you have, like, that's what we've been trained, that things without commercials are prestigious. HBO doesn't have commercials. It's not TV. Netflix doesn't have commercials. Like, it feels like the second you add ads, and I'm fully aware...
It's like putting truck nuts on your Maserati.
But I understand it's like that's we also do that at our podcast, you know, because we eventually you have to. But like, I think if we could 100% fund Bald Move the way we want it to without commercials, we absolutely would because there's a cachet to that, right?
Yeah.
But we'd have to get more than like 0.01% of our audience to join the club before we could do that. I don't know. It's to me, I always assume that the way of more money is always going to win, because outside of like literal government intervention and every once in a while mass consumer revolt, that's always what happens. Like that's the one. Yeah. It's like gravity. Like assuming things are going to start floating up is a losing bet. Things are going to sink. And I just feel like that. You know, maybe Hulu can't pull it off yet, but somebody's going to. And as you, I feel you laid it out that like maybe not today or tomorrow or next month or next year, but like they can make $1 billion instantly by turning on the spigot. Mm-hmm. They are burning through a lot of cash. There's going to be an equilibrium where they can't sign up enough new subscribers to cover that, and then boom, flip the switch. What do they got to lose?
I think we're so premature on that idea, though. Like these analysts see the dollars and they go, "Well, that makes sense. Let's just fucking do it." And
it's $1 billion, $1 billion.
Yeah, but $1 billion, I honestly believe, doesn't mean anything to Netflix right now. It's all about number of people on your platform.
Are you going to Justin Timberlake and social media me? Is like, you know what's cooler than $1 billion?
A trillion dollars. Yeah, I mean, you know what's cooler than $1 billion? 1 billion users. Like, I feel like they're building that cachet. They're building the seriousness of Netflix, and that's worth more to them than... it's 1/8 of the content budget, not the budget to run their entire fucking business, not all of their entire operations. It's 1/8 of their content budget. So like what game does that change? The game it changes is it allows some users who wouldn't be on their platform to be on their platform. But like you said, I think it reduces the cachet of Netflix.
Yeah, it
and
does.
You've got, and we're in a space here where it's a gold rush in online streaming, and Netflix wants to be the number one entity. They want to be HBO. I mean, they've said it many times. We want to have the prestige of HBO.
Yeah,
but I think they also want to do it, you know, as fast as possible. And adding advertisements doesn't seem like the way to go.
It might be a strategy to make them like purchase proof, like. Their catalog has to be worth an enormous amount of money. Like, how much would it cost Disney to buy out Netflix at this point? Like, are they trying to, like, just...
Yeah.
Like, hey, we got to get X size to make sure we don't fit in Walt Disney's mouth. So, like, is that part of the strategy, too? Because, like, I don't know.
The
like,
mouse's
some of stuff,
mouth keeps getting bigger, though.
They also, I think, this Netflix International... Because you think about English-speaking audience, which is the primary... You know, I know a lot of people watch Netflix abroad. You know, American culture... has been dominant for a long time, but it seems to me that I might live in a world before I shuffle off this mortal coil where like the Chinese Netflix or Disney or HBO or the Indian Netflix or HBO might actually be the dominant entertainment choice on the planet, because
just sheer numbers. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and plus like once you get that kind of like that money has its own gravity, once like, you know, the money starts flowing into like Beijing and Bollywood instead of Hollywood, then it's going to be more and more. And then you're right. The audiences are already bigger. So,
and Netflix knows that.
And I
Netflix
watch, sees hell, fuck, it. Like I'll watch shit, The Kingdom, you know, I'll watch.
I mean, Jin, you've got that other
Leia,
Middle Eastern,
Layla.
Netflix knows that.
Yeah.
Netflix is like, we want to be the Netflix of India and China and Korea and all of the Eastern world too.
Right.
Before, and I know there are services that
because that's the other thing is like I think of there. Like when I start thinking about like Disney and HBO, it's like all their moves are, I think Netflix is smart that they're like a pace or two ahead of everybody else by pushing into these.
They've been a pace or two ahead of everybody since mail order DVDs. Like,
yeah, right.
They know what's up with online streaming and they're trying to beat everybody to the punch. And that's why they're outspending, you know, more than they can possibly recoup to get to that finish line first.
What else do you want to talk about Netflix and commercialization?
I guess I just hope that they don't do it because I do think Netflix is like putting out a lot of really strong content.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it is worth the price. I guess like if I, you know, were 20-year-old me, I'd be like, yes, please do it because I can't afford Netflix.
Right.
And I really want to see Santa Clarita Diet season 3.
So what would your plus or minus be amount of years before they, do you think there's a chance that Netflix has never commercializes? Cause I would lay a pretty good sum of money that within 5 years they're doing commercials.
Yeah, it could be. I'm interested to see how the online streaming thing shakes out in the next 5 years, because I think, like I said, we're in the gold rush period where everybody's got a platform now. Once that stabilizes a little bit, then I think it might be time to start looking at that revenue. Okay. When you don't have to pump out, you know, a billion hours of content and act like you're the best television source on the planet.
Right, right.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Should we talk about Anima?
Yeah.
So this is a weird little piece that was co-created by Thom Yorke, and it was filmed
by
Paul Thomas Anderson.
Right.
And it's based on three songs from Yorke's solo album, also called Anima. And it's Not the News, Traffic, and Dawn Chorus. And I was expecting something pretty interpretive.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting it to be this interpretive. Like the first 3 or 4 minutes where it's just people in a subway
gyrating,
suffering from narcolepsy, I think is what they're just literally just falling asleep over each other. Like, I couldn't believe how long that sequence went on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just got more and more perplexing. And there's definitely like a... I didn't like it.
No,
so let me start there.
My kind of thing.
Let me stop there, and then what did you think of it?
Yeah, I don't like it either. I'm this art house like weird interpretive cinema is not my type of thing. I think everybody who's been listening for any time knows that.
Mm-hmm.
This was no exception.
I mean, I can warm up to it. I just so my big problem is I don't think Yorke was the greatest. Is this actually a legitimate piece of film that's trying to tell a story and make people feel things, or is this a music video for Thom Yorke? Because I was expecting the first, and what I think I got was the latter. And I don't, because if it's the first, I don't think Tom's a good enough actor to do the shit that they needed him to do. Like,
yeah.
Clearly, I'm not going to talk about, like, you know, I think he's a talented artist, but like, his face wasn't as compared to everything going around, the was like always the least interesting thing. And maybe that was part of the point, that like he's just kind of like,
right,
like zero affect everyman. Like I was just reading this this article on Pajiba about like an in-depth review of this, and like the shit that they're getting out of this there was a couple cool things. Like there's this one where he was like in some kind of blank slate, and they were clearly tilting the floor, doing something weird, a very simple effect, but the camera was locked on the plane of the floor, and it made it look like it was some kind of crazy zero G shit.
Like a smooth criminal type of thing, right?
Yeah, and like when I guess that's his wife or partner that he sees on the subway at the beginning, and then they eventually get together and their heads fuse, whatever the fuck happens. Their heads are planetary objects that are irresistibly attracted together. Like there was a nice kind of an emotional through line there of like alienation and
it's
isolation.
It's a romance story, sure.
And then, yeah. So like I get it. It's just, I don't know. I guess I was expecting more of like a visually gopher broke film. And what I got was a very high end music video starring the artist.
Yeah, and I don't know that it does it any favors that I just watched an episode of Legion that was in some ways more interesting and more creative.
It's
than
got
this
kind of batshit crazy stuff with the actual plot. And
yeah, I mean it's more engaging to me certainly because you know that's what I come to television for, is like the stories and to me like having to analyze. I mean, it goes back to like what you said. Oh, maybe that's the point of his face not having any emotion in it, right? Like, do I want to be thinking like, am I thinking about this the wrong way in every frame of the thing? Mm-hmm. Like every frame a puzzle? That's not what I'm looking for in my stuff.
See,
so like,
as you know, I can enjoy stuff like that.
I know you're much more inclined to,
but not this one.
Okay,
I just like the. Either the visuals had to be stronger or the ideas or something. It's just like I can like this stuff, but I guess I like the stuff that's like the very best. Like if it's won an Academy Award for some weird short film, then yeah, sure. I'll get on to, but like, I don't know. Again, with the pedigree, I was expecting a lot more. And then also cause like it's probably heresy, but I'm not the biggest Radiohead fan in the world.
I like their mainstream stuff.
I think some of their stuff gets a little weird and out there, yeah. And this feels very weird and out there with visuals.
Yeah, it's definitely not for me. I got the basic gist of the plot, but everything else was kind of lacking.
Do you want to talk more about Anima?
I want to rip it some more for another 10 minutes. No,
yeah,
I don't.
If you want to, because there is some. I don't know. I never thought it was like mockable.
No.
It was just bizarre and weird, and I guess I didn't get it. So
did I get it? I don't know. I felt coming away from it, there was sort of a romance story of like sort of the realities of relationships. Like, you know, people connect and people drift apart. Because I think at the end, is he on the train sitting by himself again?
I think
Did we kind of end up exactly where we were at the beginning?
Which is like,
and I don't know if that was
say,
like the death of
or is
of
it the
his
futility
partner.
Of life, or is it the fact that you get like you have
or
ups
like
and
some
downs,
transience?
Yeah,
in a relationship, like
is it some kind of Buddhist meditation? Like I don't fucking know.
That's what I was seeing in it, but I'm not really sure what the point of it all was.
Right, and it didn't make me feel enough, because that's the other thing is like if like honestly, shit, the season finale of Always Sunny in Philadelphia was a more successful piece of interpretive visual music
either,
dance than this.
Yeah.
But but would you say it's better than this? I mean, Rob McElhenney spent like a year getting his body in that good of shape. What'd Tom York do?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Spent a lifetime.
Inject his face full of Botox or something?
And he spent a lifetime addling his brain with drugs, probably. I don't know.
Maybe. Since you just already dropped it, do you want to... I got my Legion podcast with Jason tonight.
Cool.
Do you want to talk... I wasn't expecting to keep up with the Legion. Do you want to talk some Legion talk?
No, I've only seen the first episode.
Oh, okay. I thought you... Yeah, I don't know why I thought you saw this like two nights ago or whatever. No. But, all right, well, then never mind.
Tune in to Jason's podcast on podcastica.com.
Yeah, definitely do that because we're going to be recording it and releasing it probably tonight, maybe tomorrow. That's Bald Move TV for this week. Hope you guys enjoyed. It's a little bit light on television, but maybe long on industry. And again, if you guys like this, we'll probably be doing more of this kind of like news kind of rundown. We'll be back next week. I haven't had a chance to look at what the slate of stuff that we have to talk about, but in the meantime, I know it's going to be very Stranger Things heavy because we've got all the Stranger Things to watch over this weekend. We're going to have our coverage complete by early next week. With a wrap-up podcast probably the week after where we'll consider feedback and whatnot. That will be over on the Dungeons and Demigorgons podcast feed. If you search for Bald Move Stranger Things and any of your favorite podcast app, you'll find it. But that's going to be preoccupying to most of our time. We also just did a pretty cool, I thought a pretty good review of Spider-Man last night. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed seeing it. Enjoyed recording it. That's what we got. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.